The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Now, this is The Hard Shoulder. Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock. I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line now by Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee. Minister, thanks for joining us here on the show. We were talking before the break about testing and tracing and some of the difficulties there. And I'm going to get to the listener response on some of the questions they have for you in that regard in just a moment. But first, I want to talk about direct provision and this report that's been published today by Dr. Catherine Day into the direct provision system. The current system of direct provision is not fit for purpose and should be ended. Do you agree?
Well, look, I think we've clearly set out in the programme for government that we need a new system. And I think it would be unfair to the many people who've worked over the last number of years to try and provide support for those who are seeking asylum. But it's not perfect. It's far from it. And it does need to change. So we've set out very clearly in the programme for government that would happen by the end of this term. We clearly said that we would bring forward the Catherine Day report and based on those recommendations led through the Department of an Taoiseach, but mainly by Minister O'Gorman working with myself and other colleagues, we would set out a white paper exactly outlining how we would implement some recommendations of the report, obviously taking some on board, examining them, seeing where we can overall improve the process. But this is about creating a system that treats people with respect, with dignity, that responds to their needs, and that people are dealt with in as quick a fashion as possible. And these are obviously people who are coming, seeking asylum, seeking support, seeking help, and that's what we're trying to provide here.
And how many recommendations, how extensive will this reform be? Because it's not that long since we last had a report into reforming. Judge Brian McMahon in 2015, only 5 years ago, we had a report into reforming direct provision, and only a handful of recommendations were implemented. And that was packaged in much the same way you're packaging it. This is going to be a reform. This is going to make it a much fairer system. The system will be much better for those going through it. It will be a much more humane system. We basically still have the same system.
Well, look, I suppose I wasn't involved in the previous report or any of its implementation, but what I can say as Minister for Justice, who's involved in this current report, that we are very clearly setting about a white paper, and I've said we will do so by the end of the year, setting out how we will implement not just these recommendations, but as I've said, we'll have to examine and explore them and see how they can be implemented or if they need to be adapted or changed. For my own part, I've already started working. So within my own department, we have established a high level group looking at the recommendations, assessing them. That will then feed into the work that's been done on the white paper. But in this budget already for next year, I had 1.7 million allocated to try and improve the overall application process and the timeline. So at the moment, it takes on average about 15 months for an application to be processed. We want to reduce that to 9 months, and we want to reduce that even further. On top of that, then this week, there is a recommendation around access to labour. At the moment, somebody has to be in the system, and if they receive an initial response after 9 months, they can then work and access the labour market. We are now reducing it based on actual other recommendations prior to Catherine Day's report to 6 months, and the access to work will be for not just 6 months, but 12 months. So we are already actually acting on recommendations that have been made, as is the Minister for Transport in relation to driving licence, as is Minister O'Gorman as well. So I hope that in itself, the fact that we're already working on this, we're already identifying areas we need additional funding, we're already identifying new legislation, that people will see that we are very serious about this change.
I appreciate, look, you can't go through the entire report and all the recommendations and announce now what ones will and will not be ultimately implemented. But two of the most eye-catching I want to ask you about. One is a move away from the system by which provision of accommodation is outsourced and provided by private operators. And the report recommends a move away from that to the state directly providing people with their accommodation. What's your view on that?
Well, what we had said is that we would move to a system which is essentially an NGO-based system, moving away from the private sector, and that was a commitment that has been given and I think has been spoken about widely. What the report is essentially recommending is that a person would, when they arrive, that they would spend time, a short period of time in a reception centre before transitioning into accommodation in the community, that this would be turnkey accommodation.
Own-door accommodation. How feasible is it to implement a system of own-door accommodation in the midst of a housing crisis?
Well, you know, this is what we have to look at. So I think it's important for people to know that the report, while it was launched today, we are noting the report, and the important work now is to look at these recommendations and see how feasible they are, see how we can implement them. And some of them, as I've said, we have acted immediately to start progressing, but some of them do require a lot more engagement. So Minister O'Gorman has had a number of engagements Minister O'Brien, who's the Minister for Housing. It would absolutely, because what we're talking about here
is
a very short period of time that has been set out before somebody would essentially receive turnkey accommodation, that they would do it through the HAP scheme under the auspice of the council. But I mean, you have to take into account, we are obviously trying to build 20,000 houses a year to deal with the shortage that we currently have. We're in the midst of COVID. There are all of these challenges that have to be taken into account. And it's not just Minister O'Gorman, it's Minister O'Brien, who's the Minister for Housing, and it's all of the other social elements that come with that as well. So there's work that needs to be done here. But we do note the report, we do, you know, accept what has been set out in it, but there is more work that needs to be done as part of a detailed assessment of how this could work. And if we don't feel it will, then what else could?
Yeah, so that provision of own-door accommodation through local authorities, probably one of the most problematic at the moment.
Well, I mean, for the reasons that you've outlined, for the reasons that I think everybody would understand, there is somewhat of a shortage in certain areas, and we have to take all of these things into consideration. So I can't really say any further as to what may or may not be approved in relation to the housing, because I do think we need to allow the group and the committee that has been established to meet to discuss all of these and to try and set out what's practical.
Listen, Catherine Day, Dr. Catherine Day is the author of that report. We're going to be speaking to her a little bit later. At the moment, here on The Hard Shoulder, we are speaking to the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee. Minister, I want you to take a listen to a clip. This is the AGSI speaking a little bit earlier today, General Secretary of the AGSI, Antoinette Cunningham, on the Pat Kenny Show.
For us in AGSI, as sergeants and inspectors, it's the practical application of that that we are concerned about. Will we get a response to the person at the door, first of all? If we don't, it seems, again, that we're powerless. And it's very important for us to manage public expectations, because sometimes people do feel when they call the guards that we absolutely have the response to dealing with the issue, and sometimes we simply don't.
What Antoinette Cunningham was talking about there, Minister, was the difficulty that the Gardaí imagine they're going to face knocking on the door of a house where there's too many people. Whether that's a house party, whether it's communion, whether it's a birthday, whatever it happens to be, there's too many people there. And what she said was, all the person inside has to do is not answer to the door and they will avoid the new system of fines. Is she right?
Well, firstly, I mean, I fully accept and would anticipate that those who are enforcing the laws that we're now about to impose or introduce, that they would ask questions as to how will this actually work. I mean, what we have set out essentially are a number of things in relation to house parties or gatherings. I mean, as of tomorrow, you won't be allowed, or you shouldn't have anyone in your home that isn't from your home. So we're not talking necessarily always 50 people. You could have 10 people and this would still be the same offence. But where somebody knocks on the door or where somebody is called to a house because there's a party going on, I think in a lot of instances they probably will answer the door, and at that stage the guard will always ask that they clear the house and that the people leave. And I mean, it's up to the discretion of the guard then whether or not they want to issue an on-the-spot fine or a fixed penalty notice where they would then have to pay it later. If people refuse to engage with the guard and close the door and decide not to clear the house, then there is an opportunity for the guard then to issue proceedings that could potentially lead up to court. But I mean, if somebody doesn't answer the door and you have 50 people in the house, people who attend that party are now subject to a fixed penalty notice. So if they leave the house at any stage, there is the potential to be issued with a fixed charge notice from the Gardaí. You know, I think you will always have these kind of scenarios separate to COVID, or where there's an incident if somebody doesn't open the door, or where where people ignore a guard. That happens in general. But, you know, what we would really expect is that the vast majority of people, A, won't ever have to deal with this because they will comply, but those who aren't compliant, if a guard comes to their door, that they will comply with the guard. And for those who don't, there is very clear direction that they can then be penalised.
I think a lot of people will have sympathy with that argument. The AGSI, though, and other Gardaí as well, you get the sense that they're kind of nervous about wading into this kind of tangled web of fines and penalties, and even around face masks and the fact that people can have medical exemptions for wearing face masks. We had one texter in who said that they were in a large department store in Dublin City today, and when they asked a manager why the staff weren't wearing face masks, they were told they've got medical exemptions. I mean, what does a guard do, again, to someone in the petrol station who walks out, they don't have the face mask on, they try to issue a fine and say, I have a medical exemption for that?
Well, I mean, I think there's always a degree of, you know, assessing the situation. But it is important to say that we're 7 months into this pandemic. And for the most part, there have been very few guidelines. There have been very few rules where there are penal provisions and where we have actually gone to this point. The problem is, over the last few weeks in particular, what has become more apparent, and yes, it has been as our society has opened up, but it has become more apparent that people are, in some instances, not adhering. And it's not something that we have, I suppose, decided to do without consulting the Gardaí. We have engaged with the Commissioner on this, and two of the areas that they have found that have been most problematic in recent weeks and months are house parties and large gatherings, and then protests. But we also know from our Chief Medical Officer, Tony Houlihan, and the team in effort that where this is spreading now, because it's gotten into the community, is in people's homes. So, you know, a couple of months ago, we were asked about the potential of going into someone's home. We said we wouldn't do that. But we said when it came to house gatherings, this was something that we would have to keep under review, because we knew it could get problematic. And unfortunately, it has. Yeah, and this is why we're doing this.
How reluctant were you to introduce these fines? Because when you and I spoke not too long ago, a couple of months ago, about this, you did seem reluctant to want to wade into a situation whereby we were criminalising people, and maybe criminalising is a strong word, but bear with me, we were criminalising people for doing things that in a normal society without COVID would be completely acceptable things to do.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is not something that anybody has taken lightly. And the approach from the Gardaí and from all of us has always been, as they say themselves, the four E's: engage with people, educate them as to what the guidelines are, encourage them to comply, and as a last resort, enforce. And we have always wanted to take that approach. But the problem is, and I fully understand, and whether you're a young person or an older person and you have a gathering or it's a party, it's a celebration, we're not in normal times. And particularly over the last few weeks where we have seen this virus shoot up exponentially. Mm. I mean, I don't think anybody thought that we would be going, I'll be honest, I didn't think that we would be moving into level five at this stage. And we now have businesses that have to close. We have people who are losing their jobs. We have a situation where we're facing 6 weeks of a lockdown. The vast majority of people are going to comply. And those who don't at this stage, I think others want to see that there is some form of penalty. That if I'm sitting at home, I haven't seen my mother in a few weeks, I haven't seen my friends, and yet my neighbour is down the road with 50 people,
yeah,
and nobody's doing anything about it. We didn't want to get to this point, but you know, I think there comes a point where when people are not engaging, there has to be something else to show a difference.
Can I ask you to take a listen then to another clip? It's a gym owner who spoke to Andrea Gilligan on Lunchtime Live here today. Simon Murphy, he owns Westside Gym in Dublin 15.
Basically, we're refusing to close on the grounds that we feel, and it's backed up by research, that exercising is an essential part of people's day, essential for their mental health, and a really positive contributor to good mental health. And we feel, and we've seen in the UK, that a similar stance has been taken by gyms, with positive effect. We're not just trying to fly in the face of government regulations. We just don't agree with this in principle. And it's basically on those grounds that we're taking the stance that we're taking.
What's going to happen to him?
Look, I mean, I fully understand where they're coming from.
And I understand his frustration, of course, and their members. But what happens to him?
Well, I mean, what we're saying is unless you are an essential service, unless you are an essential shop, that you should not be opening. And I, you know, I accept what they're saying and that exercise is an essential part of people's day. And that's why the 5 kilometer limit is there for people to exercise. The problem is, and the reason that they are part of the non-essential group, essentially, that are being asked to close, is that it allows more people out and about into the community. And
no, I get that. But, again, what happens then? Tomorrow, like, can he be fined? The guards can't go in and shut it down, I assume, on foot of public health advice, can they? Under this famous 1947 Act, are they going to turn up tomorrow and shut his doors? What happens?
So, I mean, essentially the approach that will be taken is that a premises that isn't an essential service will have to close, you know.
And so will be forced to close if he doesn't voluntarily do so.
I would ask and I would urge, and I know there are a number of groups, I know there are a number of particular sectors that are trying to engage and that are looking to essentially change some of the recommendations that have been made. But as of tomorrow, those who are not essential services should not be opening. And I would plead with people not to. There is a reason for this. And I have to say that the more places that you have open, the more people are travelling to, the more they are engaging with each other.
No,
you know,
I accept that.
People in the countryside and don't live within 5 kilometres.
And Simon Murphy, that gym owner, and others know that, and they know that they're going to be asked to close. What happens tomorrow if those premises don't close?
So as of tomorrow, if those premises don't close, there is a potential that they will, until the on-the-spot fine comes into play, there is a potential that they could face a penalty of up to €2,500. But that is only if they refuse. I mean, this is why we're bringing in the fixed penalty notice, because the only legislation and the only fine system we have at the moment is the 1960 plus legislation, where you have up to €2,500 of a fine or potentially 6 months in prison. It's too severe. We don't want to be imposing that on anyone. And even when we used that in the previous stages of lockdown, there were very few convictions or very few charges that were pressed. But, you know, I would encourage and I would ask, and I understand why they're upset. I have a number in my own county as well. I understand the frustration here. But this is for 6 weeks where we're asking people who are not essential that they would close, because otherwise you have too many people out and about, you have too many people on the roads, you have too many contacts. But, you know, it's very clear as of tomorrow, essential services should not be open.
Can I finally ask you just about testing and tracing, Minister, and this scenario last night that played out at the start of the show? I'm not sure if you heard it. I explained how I was sitting on my sofa last night and someone sent me the copy of the IMO letter that had been sent out to all GPs. This was about 15 minutes before the Irish Times published the article, which meant that I was watching Paul Hollywood tasting people's tarts on Bake Off, and I knew that the testing and tracing system had collapsed over the weekend and GPs were being asked to pick up the slack. The Taoiseach didn't know until that article went up online. You surely would agree that is shambolic.
Well, look, I genuinely don't know who knew what, when, or whether he was referring specifically to.
But he said quite clearly, he says, I first found out I didn't know anything about this until someone sent me a text with a link to that Irish Times article.
Look, I think what's become clear over the last...
I mean, I knew watching Great British Bake Off.
Well, look, I think over the last few weeks, particularly as, I mean, take into account that in the last 7 days, the HSE has processed over 115,000 tests. And if even a fraction of those people test positive, the amount of callbacks that are needed through contact tracing. So it's inevitable that the system is going to come under pressure, particularly when you look at, say, back in March or April.
Oh, no, I completely agree. I completely agree. And people
don't
know.
But
this idea that the testing and tracing section would inform their higher-ups in the HSE, who would inform the IMO, who would inform their GP committee, who would inform every GP in the country, and no one in that chain of command would think, God, maybe we should let the government know.
Again, I can't say who knew when what. I know, and I think everybody knew that the system was
coming
under pressure.
When did you find out?
Well, I mean, I don't know exactly. I knew myself that the system was under pressure in terms of the actual texts going out, I think, in the last day or two. So I can't be sure exactly, but I mean, I wouldn't have been given direct information.
Sorry, now, just Micheál Martin was very clear. Like it was about 9 o'clock last night, I think, when that article went up. Maybe a little bit later. You possibly knew before that, the last day or two.
I honestly can't say, probably in the last day. So that could have been late last night as well. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, I think we all knew that, Minister.
If you got a text to say that we're no longer tracing people and they have to do it themselves with their GPs, you'd remember when you got it. Like, I'm not a member of government. I remember when I got that.
I didn't receive a text. I would have found out in the general way that most people have, to be honest, because it's not directly related to my department. What I do know and what I have been very aware of over the last few days and weeks is that the system is coming under pressure. Now, in terms of the texts that have gone out, as I said, I don't know where I heard it because I just heard it. It wasn't something that was specifically brought to my attention. But I mean, what the HSE have obviously tried to do is clear the backlog. But the fact that we are hiring, I think in the last 2 weeks, we've hired about 150 new people for contact tracing. There'll be between 60 and 70 people every day until we reach 800 additional new staff on a permanent basis. I think that's what people want to know, not who heard what, when, is how are we actually dealing with this? We will have 800 new permanent members who will be dealing specifically with contact tracing. And what I hope that will mean is, no matter what level we're in, how many people we're testing, that it won't come under pressure in the way that we all know it has in the last few weeks in particular.
Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee. Minister, thanks a million for your time here on The Hard Shoulders.